Good morning. Welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chiverton. Your co-host today is Michael Chagani. Michael, good morning to you.
Morning, Hugh.
Happy National Day. National and Hong Kong flags have just been raised in the usual ceremony in Golden Bohemia Square, but this year in an extraordinary setting, of course. Thousands continue to occupy key streets around Wan Chai and the city, last night developing another road blockade in Tsim Sha Tsui. What's going to happen next? There are calls now to escalate the action, perhaps, with options including occupying government buildings or a general strike. At the same time, there are questions about what it would actually take for leaderless groups like the protesters, seem to be, to withdraw. Well, have you been to the sit-ins? And if so, what was your impression? Are they, in the end, a minority seriously inconveniencing the majority of Hong Kong? Give us a call with your thoughts. Our number is 233-88266. You can text 6393-5925 or email backchat@rthk.hk. Or you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and comment there. In our central studio, we have Charles Mock, a legislator, represents the IT functional constituency, he's a member of Professional Commons, David Webb, who's a shareholder activist, founder of website.com, and Professor Ho Lok Sang, convener of Silent Majority for Hong Kong and Professor of Economics, director of the Centre for Public Policy Studies at Ling Nan University. Joining us on the line is Tommy Chung, who's president of the Student Union of the Chinese University of Hong Kong, a committee member of the Hong Kong Federation of Students, and Jean-Pierre Cambestan, professor in political science, head of the Department of Government and International Studies at the Baptist University. Charles Mock, let's start with you. Good morning. Thank you, Mr.
Morning.
For joining us today. First of all, let's sort of start with impressions. When were you last in the demonstrations, and what did you see and what did you make of it?
I was actually in the demonstration areas in all of the three areas, not in Tsim Sha Tsui, not the new one, but I was in Mong Kok last night, I was in the Causeway Bay, I stopped by both places, and I also, most of the time, I was in Admiralty until after midnight. Mm-hmm. And I think, as most people, whether they've been to the sit-ins or whether they are watching from the TV and so on, you know, this is a demonstration of the people coming out on their own. I mean, honestly, there are people who are just coming around and have a look. But I think many of them, as I saw, particularly in Causeway Bay, you know, these people are sitting there peacefully. There are not even people making speeches, but there are people helping each other and handing out food and other supplies and so on. And it's very peaceful. And then there are and it's very clear that they didn't just come out here to just spend an evening or whatever. They have a very strong demand to tell the government that they want universal suffrage, and they want CY to go.
Do you think that they would leave if CY didn't go? Do you think that's what it
well,
would
I
say?
Think I think if CY continued to talk the talk that he did, like yesterday morning, and there will be just more people coming out, and it will be harder and harder to get them.
Do you think
to go.
There'll be more people, or do you think that's it really?
Well, I think at least for the next couple of days, there will be more people. And with the attitude and the kind of tone that CY Leung has been taking, I think they are bigger supporters. He's the one who's been calling thousands and thousands of people to come out to oppose him because of what he's been saying and what he's been and the attitude that he's taking.
There are they are very young people, aren't they? The majority are young people. There's no denying that. They're students and school children. They are not the majority of Hong Kong, are they?
Well, the young people are next generation, and I
sure,
think they are.
And I think
they are the more vocal bunch. There are also
they're more vocal. They're the future. Sure. All those things, but they're not the numerical majority.
I don't think we should be just looking at the numerical majority.
You want 3.5 million people on the streets.
Yeah, in any particular movement or throughout history, a particular group will have to take the lead first. And actually, even among our friend, my generation in the 40s and 40-year-old and 50-year-olds and so on, there are lots of people, you know, opening up all these WhatsApp groups and people who are business people. They don't come out all the time, but they did come out this time. And they're also spreading the messages and support for the students. Mm-hmm. The students and all of these, most of these revolutions or demonstrations and so on, they do take the lead.
Okay. But tell us this, Charles Mark, what is going to be, I think that's the question that most people want to know. How is it going to end? What is the end game?
I don't know. I mean, this is difficult because last night I used an example. I just got a message overnight that the student leaders of both Scholarism and the Federation of Students, they actually had to try to stop some of the other demonstrators from blocking the site for the flag-raising ceremony this morning, and they were shouted at in very nasty ways and so on. So is it getting out of control? Yes. Who will benefit the most? Obviously, Hong Kong people will suffer the most. Who will benefit the most? CY Leung.
But what I meant was the end game. Supposing CY Leung steps down, then there's going to be a next chief executive. Then that person will have to be elected under the old system. And then it will then continue.
No, it will show people how, again, once again, how ridiculous the system is.
Right.
But at the same time, we are going to have a cooling off period. I think no one in Hong Kong, even the demonstrators, are demanding that CY Leung steps down and tomorrow and next. A week from there, we're going to have a one-person, one-vote and a civic nomination. No, nobody is saying that. They know that we have to follow the system that we have, but for the time being. But they're looking for change.
Okay, Jean-Pierre Cabestan, you want to comment?
Can I say something about the end game? Well, there are two important variables here which will have a big impact on the end game. Is whether the movement remains united or not. It gets more and more scattered or divided about objectives, about strategies. That's one important variable. The other one, of course, is whether, and it's linked to the first one, the Hong Kong society will continue to bring its support to the movement. Clearly on Sunday, something changed because the Occupy Central movement got the support from the large segments of the society. We'll see this afternoon whether it's going to still be the case or until the end of the week, whether the movement remains united and mobilized. Now, the end game, to me, is a meaningful negotiation with the CY Leung administration and behind the CY and beyond the CY Leung administration, between the students, between the organizers of the movement and the representatives of the Beijing authorities. I think something has not been mentioned here, but clearly what is at stake is the NPC decision of August 31st, not really what the Hong Kong authority are going to fine-tune in the coming months within that framework. What is questioned here by the demonstrators and the movement is the NPC decision. Yes, just one more word, because the authorities here, the CY Leung government, say though it's impossible. Looks like it's a page of the glass door. We can't change it. Well, there were some negotiations taking place in 2010 between the Democratic Party and the central authorities at the very time when the Hong Kong authorities knew it's impossible to change anything about, the LegCo election. So I think my point is that the central authorities, if they are willing to negotiate, of course, have more leeway than the Hong Kong authorities.
But the 2010 change was when the Democratic Party went to the liaison office and agreed to create five super seats. We're now talking, that was a more a domestic issue. We're now talking about a decision made by the National People's Congress, and it was a unanimous decision.
How do you
change that?
Well, I don't know how, but it's a result of balance of power. It depends if the street is powerful.
I know, but how does the mainland Chinese leader Xi Jinping go to the National People's Congress and say, "Okay, guys, reverse your decision"? Is that possible in a non-democratic
interference? Yeah, I would say that's an executive interference
to
the legal process.
You know very well they're perfectly capable of directing a rubber stamp parliament to stamp
but,
anything they want.
We don't want that. You know, in Hong Kong we are against that. You know, and
the majority of people. When you asked about the majority just now, why isn't there a majority on the street? Well, of course not all everybody who agrees with the protesters is on the street, and you don't need 3.5 million people to turn out to prove that point. But when you do surveys and ask people, should the Legislative Council reject what's on offer, There's a clear majority in favour of that proposition.
Yeah, that's not exactly.
There's a clear majority.
I've
seen polls.
I saw two surveys, and I saw one survey put in such a way that it's a leading question, you know, because it says that, okay, if it goes on and if it disqualifies some people with support or something like that, okay? And there's interpretation in that question. But the other question that was asked by the other university didn't have that leading element, and it's got a slight majority
over. The one
over.
Commissioned by the DAB, you mean? Which, of course, doesn't ever ask leading questions.
Now, you know what? The point
here is that there is a face-saving way for Beijing out of this.
Yep.
What they can say is, within the framework that they devised in 2007, they can say, well, clearly we have been badly advised here in the report from the chief executive, and the actual situation in Hong Kong has changed, and it's clearly, even if he got it right the first time, it certainly has changed, judging by what is happening. The actual situation in Hong Kong clearly calls for a different solution to the one we've proposed.
What, and blame
CY?
So
we're going to reopen the consultation. Yes, effectively, yes, he would be blaming CY or the person who coordinated the consultation, which was Carrie Lam.
Yeah.
Let's not enter names here. It doesn't really matter, but the face saving way out is to say the actual situation has changed, and we're going to reconsult the people of Hong Kong, and then we're going to send a report to the National People's Congress, which will say something different, and they will rubber stamp it.
All right, let's just go back a little bit. Tommy Chung is with
us.
Yeah,
let's bring in one of the heroes of this whole thing, Tommy Chung, the student leader.
Thanks, Mr. Lee, for joining us. So today's National Day. It's an interesting day to think about the relationship of these protesters to the mainland. You don't see many signs. You don't hear people really talking about Beijing or about China. All the, you know, the messages and so on seem to be directed at the Hong Kong government. I was just reading a report that there was a slight sort of disagreement just this morning between the League of Social Democrats, who wanted to shout about ending one-party rule, and students who wanted to focus on universal suffrage for Hong Kong and not target China in this way. Are these protests addressed to the Central People's Government? Are you trying to talk to Beijing when you do these sit-ins and so on?
Of course, we are focusing on the universal suffrage of Hong Kong, but as you all know, the League of Social Democrats also concerned about the democratic development of the Chinese government.
Yeah, they are opposed to the one-party state.
Yeah, so we are all opposed to the one-party state, but we think that we should focus more on the democratic movement of Hong Kong, because there is some occupation in different districts of Hong Kong. So we should focus more on this topic. And therefore, we hope the fundraising ceremony there are some demonstrators which will damage the going on of the fundraising ceremony.
But do you think, Tommy, that, you know, the students' demand now is for CY Leung to go and for the NPC to reverse its decisions? We have heard David Webb give a possible situation under which that could be done. But do you really think that this movement can make the NPC change its decision, especially under somebody like Xi Jinping?
We hope, and there is some changes in Xi Jinping's mind, because we can see that many Hong Kong people go to the join the protest, which is we all didn't expect before, and of course, as the NPC CEO also should listen to the Hong Kong people opinions, no matter they think their decision is right or wrong, but they still have to think for the Hong Kong people, like the future, and also they should care about the economic development of Hong Kong, which is also related to the economic development of the whole China.
You know, I've talked to you many times, Tommy, and with Alex and Agnes Chow and so on, and you say you're going to do this, but now we are at a situation where you say you're going to continue with it, but I know you go to college, Chinese University, and I've spoken with you many times on this. Are you going to now continue to not go to school and to carry on with this sit-in and sacrifice your education?
Yeah, we have the conference of the Castrate Committee on last Sunday, and we have about 4,000 students to participate, and all most of the students agree that we should continue the student strike if the government can reply to our missions and goals, then we may stop the student strike. However, we think the government should reply in this period, and therefore we may have some another actions that may give more pressure to our government.
I don't think it's a binary choice, Michael. I mean, when I was at college, it didn't take that long to go to lectures. You still had plenty of time to do other things. So,
yeah,
I think, you know, and people who are doing, you know, I think they can carry on with their courses and demonstrate. And you know, clearly people are turning out after work. They're still holding down their day jobs and still coming out after work.
And I don't think.
I think it's okay. You know, if the students boycott the classes, it's their decision. But if the decision to occupy Central and occupy all the streets and roads that is stopping traffic and is going to interfere into other people's life, and these are innocent people who are suffering because of this Occupy Central movement, and I think that is an abuse of civic rights.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Holok-Sang, you say that that's an abuse, and I'm going to, you know, mention again that you're the convener of the Silent Majority for Hong Kong. Now, the silent majority in this whole situation seems to have remained very silent. Is there really a silent majority, or we're now actually seeing a vocal majority?
Well, actually, we have talked about all of these things, and we have come to the for the time being, we have come to the conclusion that it's no use asking people to come out the street. You know, it's going to make the situation even worse, you know, because then you have masses of people confronting one another, and it's going to cause problems for Hong Kong. And that's why we have refrained from doing that. But on the other hand, I think many people are not happy about what's going on. And,
but they don't seem to be speaking up. Yeah, if there is a majority, they're not speaking up.
You see, the silent majority are not as well organized as these very vocal groups. But as you can recall, survey after survey has shown the position of being against the Occupy Central movement, which
but David Webb
every
said
time
those, is fi-
more than 50%. More than 50% of people were against, but only 20-something percent were for.
Yeah, Tommy Chan.
And you've not got the approval of the Hong Kong people, you know. But you said that you would get the approval of Hong Kong people.
Okay, Tommy Chan.
I don't think the May 4th movement of the students in China, when they came out, they got they did a number of public opinion polls poll everybody, and then they said, okay, we come out, we're going to strike, we're going to go on demonstration. Don't use that against the will
the
of the
May,
people.
The May 4th movement was essentially a movement against foreign power.
I don't think there's a difference.
Yeah.
People stand up for what they believe in, even if it's
soil,
our own government.
Yeah, sorry,
we have the right to oppose our own government. Don't tell me that I don't have the right to oppose my own government.
Okay, gentlemen,
you have the right to oppose.
Sorry, because Tommy Chang's on the phone, it's difficult to get word across to him.
Tommy, over to you. Tommy, the student leader, the hero of the day. Go on.
So, do you know why the people go to Central or are displaced for the occupation? Because they don't agree that the use of the tear gas and the pepper spray, and only way that the government will solve the problem is they should discuss with the protesters what the protesters want and what they can.
some our missions and goals, and that the government can reply due to the situation. But it seems that CY Leung doesn't want to discuss with us.
If CY Leung comes out and says, okay, Tommy, okay, Alex, okay, Agnes, okay, Joshua, I'm going to come here and talk with you, what are you going to tell him?
But we hope we will again to explain our ideas. And we would not insult him if he is very sincere to talk with us.
And then what will you say?
It's not just about the students, though. There are 27 elected grown-up legislators who are also opposed.
They don't even talk. He doesn't even talk to us.
You know, it's quite clear that they've misread this situation all along. That's reflected in the way they implemented that heavy-handed white paper issuance. It's reflected in the way they've advised Beijing, and CY Leung has not stood up for what people genuinely believe in. You know, Beijing could have allowed Hong Kong to be a template for democratization in China. It's clearly going to produce a more harmonious result if you allow people a free choice. But they haven't done that. And it reflects, really, back on 2003, when the Central Policy Unit advised Beijing that there wouldn't be much opposition to implementing Article 23. And they got that completely wrong. And there were hundreds of thousands of people on the street. On the 1st of July that year, 11 years ago, they misread the public, and they've done so again.
Let's face some real politics here. We want now the National People's Congress to reverse its decision. You look at the situation from the mainland's viewpoint. Hmm. They look at what's happening here. They look at what's happening in Tibet. They look at what's happening in Xinjiang. And they look at what's happening in nearby Shenzhen and so on. If the National People's Congress reverses its decision for Hong Kong, how do you think mainland leaders will see that as affecting their own domestic politics?
Well, I think none of us should be here to try to find a way for Xi and the rest of the leaders in China to tell them, to teach them how to hold on to their power without more political changes that are overdue for many, many years. So I don't know whether or not we should even think about answering that question.
We have to answer that question.
Obviously, if China was today a multi-party democracy, they would not be denying democracy to Hong Kong.
But it is not. That's what I'm saying. Let's talk about real politics.
They have to read the writing on the wall, right?
But the problem
is their chance.
Yeah, right. They should have changed a long time ago.
Yeah, but
and it's never too late to change.
Okay, Herlock Sang. Herlock Sang. Herlock Sang.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Herlock Sang, please.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is that China's system, of course, has problems, but China's acting to improve that, and actually in the coming fourth plenum of the Central Committee in China, they are going to talk about the rule of law. You know, and
they're locking up dissidents.
But this is the very first time that this has brought to the fourth pin. That high status. You know, and you can see that Xi Jinping has been working very hard. You know, to check power abuses. And actually, this is from him. He said that we need to put the powers into a cage of the institutions, you know, so he has to set up systems
Powers. Okay, some interesting emails I'd like to get to. Our email address, backchat@rthk.hk, would very much like, this is a, you know, supposed to be a panel discussion where everyone can join in, so, you know, really appreciate your comments. Okay, a couple more from Adam, first of all. He says, I don't think many, if any, university lecturers will be failing students who don't attend classes this semester because of the boycott. Adam says, I'm not out demonstrating on the street, so I guess I am part of the silent majority. However, I'm very happy with the streets being occupied. Very happy. The environment has improved tremendously. Thank you for occupying the streets. Andy says, this is interesting, Andy says, on your program, you frequently have Peter Wong, MPC member, putting forward the establishment view. He usually cites national security as a reason for restricting the choice of candidates for CE and states that patriotism is a requirement for CE candidates. How is patriotism to be judged by the nominating committee members in the Chinese government? Is Mr. Raphael Hui, former chief secretary, on trial a patriot? In June
1989, Peter Wong appeared on the BBC's Panorama programme asking the British government to give British passports to Hong Kong people. Is he a patriot? Is Chang Yuk Sing, who applied to emigrate to Canada after 4th of June 1989, a patriot? Mr. Bo Xi Lai, a patriot? And any other members of the reported 100,000 members of the Chinese Communist Party under investigation for corruption, patriots? I've just seen the flag-raising ceremony on TV. And Andy asks also, why doesn't Mr. Donald Jung never attend? Has he ever been seen in public since 2012? Is he a patriot? Asks Andy. Interesting questions there. And one more comment from Ian, who says, good morning, Backchat. The protests out on the streets have, in my opinion, brought forward the full picture of Hong Kong being just part of the one-party state of China. Better to know now than later. Ian also says, I've just learnt of the suicide by gunshot, that's according to Chinese radio, of an expat police officer this morning at a North Point police station. As yet, no mention at all on RTHK. I can't verify that at all. I don't know anything.
That's true.
All right, so thank you very much indeed for those comments. More to share, and we will read them out. Thank you very much indeed. Backchat at rthk.hk is our email address. You can also text 639359925 or go to our Facebook page as well and debate at any time there. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. We're going to continue this discussion for days, I think, and in the immediate future, in 3 minutes after the news at 9 o'clock. Before that, here's the weather forecast for today, if you're thinking of going out and about. And I can, in an impartial way, recommend that you do go and visit the blockades and see the students.
Well, I've been doing that for days. I don't know whether any of you guys have.
It is very interesting, and you can only learn whether or not, whatever your attitude to them, it's interesting to go and see. Anyway. Welcome back. This is Backchat on Wednesday morning, this National Day, October the 1st. Michael Cigani and me, Hugh Chewerton, are your hosts. We're continuing our discussion about Occupy Central. We'd very much like to hear from you. Our email address, backchat at rthk.hk. You can go to our Facebook page as well, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and comment there on anything you've heard or anything you want to say. Or you can text us, 639359925. Okay, we have with us Jean-Pierre Cabestan, Professor of Political Science at the Baptist University. Later we're going to be joined by Tommy Chung. He's just having a little break at the moment from a student union president from the Chinese University, committee member of the Federation of Students. Ho Lok Sang is in our central studio, convener of Silent Majority for Hong Kong, Professor of Economics, Director of the Centre for Public Policy at Ling Nan, and David Webb, who's the founder of Website.com, a shareholder activist, and Charles Mock, who's a legislator who represents the Information Technology Functional Constituency. He's from Professional Commons. Okay, a couple more emails. First of all, one from Bowen on the subject of change. He says, the Chinese Communist Party is not incapable of change. If you look at the reverses and multiple reverses they have made since 1949, if anything, the I Ching, the Book of Changes, is the Bible of the Chinese. We should look at the track record of what the CCP has done over a long period of time, rather than just listen to the sound bites of the moment. Deng Xiaoping had been condemned as a capitalist roader and a revisionist numerous times. For changes to be materialized, however, somebody has to keep the hope alive. Let it be Hong Kong, says Bowen. Craig says, I met the protesters last night. I enjoyed their conversations. They're insightful and clearly know what they're wanting to achieve. However, I did encourage them to expand on their demands as follows. One, fight for the abolition of functional constituencies. Two, demand the Hoeng Ki Kok be labelled as an environmental terrorist organisation and outlawed. Three, the classification of first and second class Hong Kong citizens be removed. As we know, so-called indigenous male villagers are first class citizens with their rights, privileges, the rest of us second class. They did agree, and let's hope they take these on board, says Craig on Lantau. Thank you very much indeed for those comments. So what about the issue of change? Can they change? Ho Lok Sang?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, yes, I agree. That is exactly what I've been saying. The Communist Party of China has been evolving and has improving. And one of the biggest benefits of democracy, okay, in the sense of public election, is for peaceful transition of power, okay, transfer of power from one generation to another generation. I find it amazing, you know, how China could achieve that without more at least what we can see as power struggle, okay, since the opening up. Prior to that, we've seen lots of political struggles and power struggle, and that really got the entire country embroiled in very terrible situations. And China hasn't seen any of that for a long time. And I'm amazed how it has been able to do that. So apparently it has some kind of mechanism for selecting the leaders. And so far, it seems to be so good.
Do you know what that mechanism
so
is? Because, you know, no one
yeah.
has,
it's not very apparent. It's not very apparent, but if we just look at the results, of course, I'm not happy with China locking up, rights activists. You know, that I have shown my disagreement all along. But on the other hand, you cannot deny its amazing achievements, you know, because China was a country with the most impressive record of poverty alleviation on the globe.
Only after creating massive poverty for 30 years after 1949.
Well, no, I mean, let's get this
in perspective.
That was an economic recovery.
They've been working through an economic recovery since 1979, and they're still only at 20% of developed world levels of GDP per capita.
Yeah. Well, but
let's put it in perspective.
It's several times that of India.
If China China had been an open society after 1949, it could have been just as strong as Japan.
It is now a much more open society than before. You know, I'm amazed how China was able to turn from a very closed society into a much more open
society that censors the internet,
much more open.
I think we should be looking at the lost opportunities.
You've got to look at it in perspective.
I think
we need
to look at it in perspective. It's a lot of lost opportunity. I totally agree that we should have been democratizing China long time ago.
But that's where the dangerous talk comes in. You want to democratize Hong Kong, and even the students are saying, leave China alone. That's not our battle.
Okay, Jean-Pierre Cabessan.
Thank you. Yes, because it's kind of a discussion about the long-term evolution of China. I think we should come back to our subject of the day, which is Hong Kong political reform. Of course, China is going through big changes. The rule of law project is not that new. I remember that in 1996, Jiang Zemin wanted to create a rule of law in China, a socialist rule of law, and we've seen the results so far has been pretty disappointing. I think we have to bear in mind that China will remain rule and the foreseeable future by a one-party system. And the question is, of course, how much freedom can a one-party system give Hong Kong? Now, there's been a lot of discussions, particularly outside of Hong Kong, in Europe, in America, about the possible impact of the Occupy Central movement on the regime in mainland China. Here, I would be more cautious than many observers. I think China is a very different, mainland China is a very different polity. And as we can see, the authorities have been able to control the access to internet. And a lot of people in mainland China are misinformed or uninformed about what's going on in Hong Kong. Now, the people are savvy with internet, and you know they can see a lot of things still. But I think the mood in China is not, and the political culture in China is quite different from what we're having here. Now, the question is how much China can authorize in terms of freedom and political representation here. And I don't think that actually having, because for since the handover, Hong Kong has been a semi-democratic place. So I don't think it poses a real national security threat to China if the if Hong Kong becomes more democratic. I think we can separate both. Now the question I have to. Actually, the silent behind the silent majority is to the DAB, as in the DAB has been pretty silent in these games. I think sooner or later, there will be some kind of dialogue, if not negotiation.
Well, they're waiting for instructions from Beijing.
Yes, of course, but I mean, they have their own political interest and electoral interest in Hong Kong, so they have to bear that in mind as well. Now, I think there will be some kind of dialogue. Whether it's going to be meaningful, we don't know. Whether it's going to be Carrie Lam instead of CY Lam, will we initiate the dialogue? I don't know. But behind them, of course, there will be Beijing. I personally, I don't think that the NPC decision will be revised. but it can be amended or supplemented by something, by a promise for 2022, or additional considerations for the full election, democratic election of the LegCo. I think there are a number of things which can be negotiated with Beijing, but clearly I don't think that the final negotiator are going to be the CY Leung administration, because they are powerless to negotiate anything meaningful.
Okay, a couple of interesting comments on, thank you, on our Facebook page. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Okay, Gary says, was the silent majority represented the one who scaremongered months ago there would be no food in the supermarkets, that people would die on Hong Kong Island, the traffic would be gridlocked all the way to the border? Is it the same one? Who should believe a word he says now? Ho Lok San, what about those? What about those?
I think that is the same one, yes.
The videos of, you know, gridlock all over Hong Kong. If the tunnels are blocked, then the whole of the Hong Kong economy, the whole of the Hong Kong transport system grinds to a halt. There'll be criminals on the streets with AK-47s. There'll be people dying. I'm not exaggerating. This was Robert Chow's video. This is literal. I'm just telling you what was in that video. That was absurd, wasn't it? In retrospect,
I don't believe that. Yeah, I don't believe that report. But of course, you can also see some problems, you know, arising. Like indeed, some supermarkets couldn't fill, you know, the shelves with vegetables and so on, and some people have difficulty of buying the needed groceries, you know, in some localities, but not everywhere. So the inconvenience and the problems that this whole mess is causing, I think it's disrupting people's lives. And as I said, people have the right to lead a normal life, you know. And universal suffrage, of course, is important to us. But sacrificing the rule of law, I know some people are going to disagree with me and saying that that civil disobedience is a fine tradition of the rule of law and so on. Okay, but let us look at it. Okay, if you compare the World Justice Project's ranking of Hong Kong versus United States, okay, Hong Kong's mark is 0.76 and United States is only 0.71. We are well ahead of United States.
What does that measure?
And that's the World Justice Project.
What is the measure? World Justice?
World Justice Project's Rule of Law Index.
Your submission, Ho Lok San, on the constitutional reform is that there should be an 1,800-member committee with a 10% nomination threshold.
Presumably
the silent majority is rather unhappy with a 50% nomination threshold that came out of it.
I'm not happy with that.
Isn't the silent majority also opposing the NPC decision, saying that 50% is too high? Because that's what you submitted, 10%. I would have said 12.5%, which is what we already had. Why do you think 50% is now okay?
I didn't say 50% is okay.
It's not.
Okay. I didn't say it was okay.
Yeah, you know, David,
you see, given that it has already been set out, you know, by the NPC, National People's Congress Standing Committee, we can find some way out. And actually, I have been talking with a professor at University of Hong Kong. He had a very good idea. You know, he said that, well, even within the framework, it's possible to have a way out and have and allow people with different backgrounds to come out meaningfully. And the way he proceeds is that he suggests that supposing you have a list of people nominated and approved by the nominating committee, and supposing it is not considered acceptable by Hong Kong people, the turnout rate, okay, so which is the percentage of the electorate that comes out to cast a vote, would be low. Supposing it's lower than 50%, then we make it necessary for the nominating committee to go back to drawing board to nominate another list of candidates.
But you know, that's all about political reform. Charles Mok, you're the only legislator here. I want to ask you this, part of the PAN Democrats. Following what happened over the weekend with the tear gassing and the demonstrations, is there, I know you want NPC to change its decision, and I know you want CY Leung to step down. Let's suppose that neither of those things happen. Is there any way at all that when the package comes to a vote in LegCo, that some of the PAN Democrats will cross over and support it.
Well, it's even more difficult now, isn't it?
That's what I mean, yeah.
So you can basically forget about it. And that's
so
partially,
we can now assume that it's out.
It's out. That's,
definitely out, right?
That's partially why Carrie Lam came out a couple of days ago to say that she's going to delay the second round of the consultation, because it doesn't make any difference.
I mean, the thing is
whether
that the whole package,
she went ahead or not.
The whole package is basically dead in the water.
It's dead in the water. It's actually, I just want to make a point that about you mentioned about Robert Chow. So, actually, looking back at what he's been saying about the Occupy Central and so on, I think he knew something that we didn't. He really knew what he was saying. I have to say, originally, what was Occupy Central? It would be happening starting today, maybe this afternoon, and then people would be sitting there in Central in a confined location, sitting there. And waiting to be carried away, it might be over in a day or 2 days or 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then what happened? The government closed off the Civic Square, provoking the students, and then the police cordoned off the area so new people or the citizens wanting to join in the demonstration could not come in on Saturday, creating the blockade outside Admiralty, and then the tear gas and the police came in, and then this whole mess.
So who did Robert Chow know?
Who started? Well, he seemed to know about this chaos.
Okay. So are you saying
originally there wouldn't be any chaos?
I think
he probably really thought about it, and he thought, well, actually, if you look at what C.Y. Leung has been saying, yesterday he was saying that you guys, the organizer of Occupy Central, you said that if it's out of control, you are going to stop it. But this wasn't the Occupy Central that they were planning.
But then are you saying that it was premeditated by...
Well,
by,
I have
by,
to say that I have to... I have
by
to
Robert
believe
Chow?
That, I have to believe... Well, Robert Chow, that... But C.Y. Leung. C.Y. Leung. Look at the behavior of the police. This is not just poorly managed. I have to say that this whole thing, he was out there to provoke, to make this as uncontrollable as possible.
How does that help anybody?
I don't go with that conspiracy theory.
Do you, David, go with that conspiracy?
No, I don't. I don't. But I do think...
I can't believe that.
I do think that from the moment the NPC announced its decision, it was quite clearly a proposal that didn't walk and talk like democracy. And one way or the other, they were going to have hundreds of thousands of people on the street demonstrating, whether it would be a march on the 1st or 2nd of October, or whether it would be the form it currently takes. The same result is you're going to have hundreds of thousands of people out there today saying 50% is a pre-election, it's unacceptable, it's not what we were promised. Go back to the drawing board and deliver something which is acceptable.
All right, okay, we're joined. Tommy Chung is back with us now, President of the Student Union of the Chinese University. Mr. Chung, thanks for coming back. Okay, this is a comment on our Facebook page from Pofun Ellen Fang, who says, Occupy Central trio and scholarism set a fire all over Hong Kong and ran away. When asked how all this will end, the answer is it isn't up to us, it's up to the fire. She says, I see this as an orchestrated effort with foreign participation to create chaos in Hong Kong and unseat the government. What I'm even more infuriated about is the police, in order to carry out their duties, are treated as bandits, and the bandits have become untouchables and saints. The fire will keep burning. I don't see a way out of this. Another Arab Spring is on the way. Tommy Chung, a lot of people are worried that this is going to end in violence, that this is going to end very badly. What would you say to prove them wrong?
I think Occupy Central, also Occupy Causeway Bay, also Occupy Mong Kok, will be going on peacefully, because you can see that although the police used tear gas or the pepper spray, but the citizens does not attack any police, and they would continue the assembly peacefully, and some of the government officials and the policemen also claim that this is a peace protest. Of course, we hope it's not out of control, and it's totally under control by we are having different members that we will go to different districts to help the assemblies to go on.
This is a group that doesn't walk on the grass. Right. I mean, this is a group that cleans after itself. Cleans up after itself every morning.
Can this then become the new normal? Supposing this becomes a new normal, because life, as Hugh pointed out, has not turned out to be the way Robert Chauer turned it out to be. We are actually going on as normal. Some supermarkets have been inconvenienced. Some people have been inconvenienced. But can this then be the new normal and then go on indefinitely? The NPC does not change its position. You occupy streets. The government says, okay, go ahead and do that. The police say, all right, go. If you want to do it, that's your will. You do it. We're not going to come and bother you. And gradually we adapt to a new normal and life will go on with a bit of inconvenience. But then, and it goes on indefinitely. Well, can that happen?
But already Occupy Central organized, well, Benny Tice and so on have spoken of a new phase and wanting to do something else. So not just, I mean, moving on from the occupation. I mean, Tommy Chung, what do you think about that? What comes next? Is there something else you want to do? Benny Tice spoke of waves of protest.
Of course.
What's next?
We should seek the government response to the protest. They cannot keep normal as before, because it's clearly that the occupation will go on, and also more protesters will participate.
But will there be anything else, or will it just stay as an occupation? Do you have any other thoughts?
We have to find ways out, because only occupy. Occupying street is not a...
But whatever you do, it has to be peaceful, because the minute you make it not peaceful, then you'll have public opinion turning against you. So if you do it peacefully, then you can always adapt to a new normal. Okay, this is peaceful, we'll live with it.
We still find another way that we can protest peacefully. As you have mentioned before, we may go to some government buildings. Maybe we could occupy.
But if you break into a government building, that is a violent act.
But we hope this what we do near the government headquarters. We may do such thing outside the government buildings, which we may.
Well, are you going to break into a central government office?
We will not.
Break into RTHK? This is a government building. You've got to come over here.
We will not break into any building with force. We would not use any forces or any violence during the protest, as we know that Hong Kong people would not accept any kinds of or any means of violence.
I think these people, Mr. Tommy Chung and others, are far more in touch with public opinion than the government is on this. They understand.
But unfortunately, as you may recall, 11 security officers were injured and 4 police officers were hurt. Okay, right on the first day. Okay, when this thing happened, you know, initially there was a degree of violence. You know, even though today we don't see much violence at all.
When the police used the tear gas, more than thousands of people hurt. I also have been hurt by the.
I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday. The hospital authority hospitals received altogether 47 injured people, consider that if you have 47 people,
security
officers and four police officers.
The hospital officials asked them whether they participate in the Occupy Central, and they will mark down the information, which is not fair to the participants.
Why are we arguing about who got hurt more? Do anything. He's just hiding behind his microphone and keep on telling the Occupy Central leaders to stop it. And he is not coming out to speak to anyone else.
Yes.
I mean, he's not a responsible leader. Let's face that and not argue about whether the police are wrong. wrong or the demonstrators are wrong, who provoked who. I don't want to demonize all the police force. That is wrong.
Has that happened, though, Charles Mark? I mean, are we now seeing the police as the enemy?
I don't think so. No. I think you see yesterday,
they're
the last couple
job,
of days,
yeah.
They're doing their job, and they're respected by most of the demonstrators of, you know, being there and keeping peace. When somebody threw an egg, they come out and help the situation. So, no, I think that the reputation has been damaged. Somebody has to take the responsibility.
They were
maybe
following
the police,
Sunday night, yeah. They were following orders.
Police commissioner has to take some responsibility or all the responsibilities, but not the frontline policemen. I think most people in Hong Kong still respect them, but they have a lot of reputation to try to mend.
Yes, but something was broken on Sunday night in the social bond between the society and the police.
Yes.
And I think the level of stress in the police has decreased since then. So
I don't think the bond's been broken because I think the police were acting under orders. They were following instructions to deploy, to use tear gas.
Well,
They didn't just go out and start using tear gas on their own. They were told
I said the police action was unwise, but...
No, it's the government's action.
Well, somebody has to be responsible.
Put yourself in the position of the officers who had the order, not necessarily to use tear gas as such, but to clear the streets so that the following day, when business opens, things will get back to normal. Okay, think about yourself in the position of the police officers. What would you do? You know, and
I'll throw down my stuff and go away.
It's not possible.
If the marshal caught me, they go ahead.
Okay, Tommy Chang. Yeah.
Professor Ho.
Yeah.
Do you know what situation? Under what situation the police can use their tear gas? Of course, they are they are attacked. They can use tear gas to clear the streets, but the protesters won't attack any police during that moment. Also, they didn't carry any weapon.
We don't want to demonize the whole police force and every policeman, but somebody has to take responsibility for this act.
Should it be the police commissioner, CY Leung, or the commander?
There was a commander.
Who actually gave the
commander. No.
The commander made the decision.
The buck stops at the highest.
Yeah.
Because CY Leung and Andy Chang were both at the press conference.
And that's the only
way to
amend the situation in Hong Kong.
No, what I'm saying is both of them
at the very least.
No, what I'm saying is both CY Leung and Andy Chang were at a press conference when the tear gas were fired. So as far
they
as...
They gave the authority.
They gave the orders.
No, listen. As far as I know, and I was told this, that the police commander at the scene had asked them whether... They needed to fire tear gas, and the response from Andy Chang and CY Leung was, CY Leung particularly said, I would prefer that you don't, but if you feel you need to, then it's your decision.
Okay, that's enough authority.
Okay, then, of course,
that's enough authority.
Having said that, I think we need a full disclosure. That's why we need full disclosure. It's not what you heard, what I think, and what other people have
heard. Would it
heard.
Help if there was an independent inquiry into why the tear gas
was
fired?
But this is after this is a separate issue. The IPCC needs to look at whether there was unreasonable force being used there. And who authorized it. And if CY Leung said, I prefer that you didn't, but you can if you want, that's authorization.
Yes.
He authorized the tear gassing of his own people. And in circumstances in which they were not being violent, it was simply being used as a... in the mistaken belief that you can clear crowds that way.
Well, the tear gassing was not intended to hurt people.
It was in the mistaken...
was intended to disperse
people. Alongside signs saying, disperse or we fire.
It's a wrong decision, yeah. It's a wrong decision.
They pre-arranged signs saying, disperse or we fire, deliberately ambiguous sign, and then on the TV news, there were pictures of riot police pointing guns at people.
What's ambiguous about that?
Because is it firing tear gas? Is it firing live rounds? There were people on TV... riot police with guns pointed at people, presumably with rubber bullets inside
them. I
took
some pictures of those. It's in my phone.
Yeah.
Okay. People holding rifles.
All right. Well, we're going to do this all again tomorrow and for the foreseeable future. We'll be back with another special back chat on a holiday at 8:30 tomorrow. Very interesting discussion this morning. Thank you very much indeed, gentlemen. That's Jean-Pierre Cabestan from the Baptist University, Tommy Chang from the Hong Kong Federation of Students, Professor Ho Lok Sang from Lingnan University, constituency, David Webb, a shareholder activist, and Charles Mock, a legislator who represents the IT functional constituency, also a member of Professional Commons. And thank you very much to all those who sent emails and commented on our Facebook page as well today. I would recommend that people, listeners, go out and go to your local occupation, have a look for yourself, whether or not you support. It's very well worth going and perhaps talking to some of the people and seeing what's actually going on the ground. And then you can report back tomorrow at the same time, as I say, as we're joined by Ada Wong for the programme tomorrow as a co-host. Leaving you now with the weather. Thank you very much indeed, by the way, Michael.
Thank you.
Sunny intervals and a couple of showers. Maximum temperature 30 degrees. That look, it's going to be mainly cloudy with a few rain patches in the next couple of days. The air temperature now 27 Celsius, and the relative humidity is at 91%.